ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नूनं प्रमत्ता कुरुते विकर्मा यत् इन्द्रियप्रीतय आप्नोति न साधु मन्ये यत आत्मनोऽयम् अस्सन् अपि क्लेशत आश देहा। When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activity. He does not know that due to his past misdeeds, he has already received a body which, although temporary, is the cause of his misery. Actually, the living entity should not have taken on a material body, but he has been awarded the material body for sense gratification. Therefore, I think it is not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again in the activities of sense gratification, by which he perpetually gets material bodies one after another. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Begging, borrowing, and stealing to live for sense gratification is condemned in this verse, because such consciousness leads one to a dark, hellish condition. The four sinful activities are illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling. These are the means by which one gets another material body that is full of miseries. In the Vedas, it is said, Asango Hyayam Purusha. The living entity is not really connected with this material world, but due to his tendency to enjoy the material senses, he is put into the material condition. One should perfect his life by associating with devotees. He should not become further implicated in the material body. Today, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, entitled Lord Rishabhadev's Teachings, text number 4. In today's world, parents are very concerned about their children's education. Education prepares one to live a fruitful, prosperous, and happy life for the future, to assure a sense of security and stability as well. That is the purpose of education. We find in this chapter Lord Rishabhadev, who is the emperor of the world, giving his last message to his 100 sons. Eldest amongst his sons is Bharat Maharaj, who was soon to become the king of the world. 9 of his sons were going to become Paramhamsa sannyasis, others Brahmins, and others Kshatriyas, who would be rulers of mankind. In this chapter, Rishabhadev is giving his sons the most, what he considers to be the most important education. He's not simply telling Bharat Maharaj and brothers about how to
engage in effective politics, in being a very excellent statesman, in organizing military phalanxes against one's opposition. This he has already been trained in. Rajavidya Rajaguyam Pavitram Itam Uttamam. Krishna says in Gita, what is the king of knowledge? The most important secret of all secrets. It is knowledge of the eternal soul. And how to live in this world in such a way that we do not become further entangled in its complexities. How to live our life in such a way that we pursue the truth on the path of liberation. That is essential knowledge. In this particular verse, Rishabhdev is giving a very serious warning to his 100 children. And through them, the Lord is instructing the whole world. Nunam pramata kudute vikarma yad indriya pritya apranoti. That one who considers sense gratification to be the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad. Mad after material enjoyment. And that madness deludes the soul to such an extent that a person indulges in sinful, immoral activities that are the cause of endless sufferings, birth after birth after birth. Sense gratification. Can someone turn the fans on? Everyone looks like they're suffering. Sense gratification is born of ignorance. That is all. When one considers the body to be the self, and the false ego overcome ones, one considers oneself to be the enjoyer. We are eternal souls. Our nature is to serve the senses of Krishna. But under this illusion of the false ego, we consider ourselves to be the enjoyers. And therefore, through this vehicle of the material body, we are striving and struggling to find the aim of life, which is enjoyment. Of course, in Kali Yuga, this is considered to be intelligence. In previous ages, people were considered ignorant, degraded fools if they engaged in sinful activity. But in the Kali Yuga, people are considered very heroic, intelligent, if they can somehow or other attain in their life vast quantities of sense gratification. They are the heroes of the world. This is the unfortunate condition of the world today. But Krishna tells us in Gita how this lust, this desire for personal selfish enjoyment is the source of all miseries. Maya Devi, through the objects of the senses, captures the conditioned soul and keeps him bound to sufferings, birth after birth after birth. But the illusory energy's great genius, because after all, mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Maya is Krishna's external energy. Is so brilliant that she keeps us bound to miseries by constantly deluding us to think that the sources of misery will give me happiness. And therefore, we cannot give them up. It's very, very difficult. Yatato hyapikonteya purushastya vipashyata indriyani pramatini haranti prashabhamana. Krishna tells in Gita, the senses are so strong and impetuous, Arjuna, that they carry away even the intelligence of a man of discrimination. And Prabhupada gives example herein of Vishwamitra Muni. Such a man. He was so very, very deeply learned, so renounced, but still, for some insignificant sense pleasure, he lost what he spent his whole lifetime to achieve. He spent centuries, he spent thousands of years performing tapasya to get powers. And he gained tremendous powers, so much power that Indra himself feared him. It was not easy for him to become so great. He literally performed severe austerities for thousands and thousands of years. Such excruciating hardships. He gave his life, his soul. What to speak of the incredible, brilliant intelligence he had. But yet, for some insignificant sense enjoyment, he lost everything. And he was thinking he was enjoying for a very short amount of time, but ultimately realized, I've wasted my life. That is the power of the senses when they aren't controlled. Dhyayato vishayan pungsang, sangas te shubhajayate, sangat sangjayate kama, kama krodo bhajayate. Krodat babati samohat samohat smriti vibrama, smriti bramshat buddhinasho, buddhinashat pranashyati. While contemplating the objects of the senses, we develop attachment. From such attachment, kama, or lust, awakens. Attachment and lust. They awaken simply when the mind contemplates the objects of the senses. And when lust is unfulfilled, krodad becomes anger. Becomes frustration, anxiety. And from anger, our intelligence is lost. When the intelligence is lost, the memory is bewildered, and then one falls down again into the material pool. Rupa Goswami explains, adosha tatata sadhu sangota brajanapriya. Step by step, how we come from the point of conditioned life, little bit of faith, how we go step by step by step to the highest goal of prema bhakti. In these two slokas from the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining how we can go from even a spiritual position, step by step by step by step, into falling deep into the abyss of the pool of material ignorance, bondage, and suffering. It is a gradual process that generally people fall down. Therefore, Krishna explains exactly how it happens. Therefore, Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita, from the very beginning, from the point of contemplation on the objects of the senses, we must become very strict. Indriyanam hicharatam yanmanonavadiyate tadasya harati pragya vayurnavamavambasi.
On any one of the senses in which the mind focuses, one's intelligence becomes carried away as a ship is carried away by a storm in the midst of the ocean. This is the ocean of material existence we are living in. Now, have any of you ever gone way into the middle of the ocean? For thousands of miles in every direction, there's nothing but the salted waters. And generally, in the depths of the ocean, that water is freezing cold. You can't drink it. It's full of salt. And there are sharks and all sorts of other fishes down there that can devour you within moments. And it's miles and miles deep. It's a helpless condition. Years ago, in the previous century, a famous man entered into history for swimming across the English Channel. What is the English Channel? It's just a few miles of water. But has anyone ever attempted to swim across the ocean? Has anyone even considered it? It's vast. It's insurmountable. So if you're on a little boat, just a little boat in the center of the ocean, how vulnerable you are. But actually, that's the situation every one of us are in. It is explained that this material existence is like a vast ocean, Bhava Sagar, ocean of material existence. And it's an ocean of miseries, material existence. And the human body is a boat. It's a very frail, small, little tiny boat. Consider the Atlantic Ocean, the Pacific Ocean, even the tiny little Arabian Sea is uncrossable by this body. But when we're talking about the ocean of material existence, we're talking of the ocean, the causal ocean. All the unlimited universes with all the unlimited planets are floating like little tiny islands in this ocean. So what is the significance of this little body that we have to cross over the ocean? Whether we are a champion athlete who could lift heavy weights, or we're just a tiny little baby, in the face of the ocean of material existence, it makes absolutely no difference. We are simply insignificant. And the purpose of this human body is specifically to cross over the ocean of material existence. So here we are. And it is explained that the spiritual master is the captain who can help to navigate the course to bring us across. If we do not have a proper spiritual master, then what is our position in this ocean of material existence? We're just going in circles. We're not at all using this body for its purpose, to cross the ocean of material existence, to come to the shore of the spiritual world. We're simply going in circles, around and around and around, birth after birth after birth after birth after birth, drinking the salty waters, being devoured by the timangila fish and the sharks. Brahmanda brahmite kona bhagyavan jiva guru krishna prasari vai bhakti latha bija. After so many millions and millions of births of wandering in this ocean of material existence, when one becomes fortunate, one gets the association of a spiritual master who gives us the direction in which we can cross over this ocean
once and for all with this body of human life. And what are the directions he gives us? By the grace of the spiritual master, he blesses us with the breezes of the words of the Vedas. This is Guru Parampara. He's speaking the truth according to the scriptures. And that truth can carry us across this ocean by his grace. But Krishna's warning us, as this little, tiny, insignificant boat, if there is a cyclone or a hurricane, a massive wind, massive rain, massive waves, tsunami wave in the middle of the ocean. You saw how this tsunami wave affected people on the shore. Can you imagine if that wave, which is going in the ocean, it slows down by the time it gets to the shore. But in the ocean, it's going about 500 miles an hour. Hare Krishna. Can you imagine being hit by that wave then? There's no place to run, no place to go. So we do not take it seriously, but Krishna is telling that even one of the senses on which the mind focuses puts us in this predicament of a boat on a water being swept away by a strong wind. What happens? Our intelligence is lost. And when the memory is bewildered, after it, intelligence being lost is the last stage before we fall down again into the material pool. It is Krishna's warning. Therefore, Krishna tells in Gita that just as a tortoise withdraws his senses within his shell, an intelligent person must withdraws his limbs within the shell, an intelligent person will withdraw the senses from their objects. And Srila Prabhupada explains, the tortoise has a shell that has the power to protect it from all dangers. What is our protection? Our only protection is Krishna. Unless Krishna saves us, we have no hope. Daivi yeshu guna mayi mama maya duratyaya. Mame vami papadyante mayameta tarantite. This material nature, this divine energy of mind consisting of three modes of material nature, very difficult to overcome. But one who takes shelter of me can easily cross beyond it. So just as the tortoise withdraws limbs within shell for protection, a devotee must seek shelter of Krishna. There's no other shelter from Maya. We have already discussed Vishwamitra Muni, a classic example of someone who tried to take shelter of his own powers, his own intelligence, but ultimately was overcome. But later on, when he took shelter of Lord Sri Ramchandra, he was liberated forever. So for a devotee, according to our sincerity, we understand sense gratification to be spiritual death. Srila Prabhupada explained that sense gratification and Krishna consciousness go ill together. They're opposites. They're actually contradictory to each other. Sense gratification is the process in which Maya Devi steals our heart away from Krishna. But Krishna is Hari. Hari means if we take shelter of him, Krishna steals our heart away from Maya. So this is the tug of war within the heart of a devotee. For non-devotees, there's no war. The non-devotees have just surrendered their lives to Maya Devi. There may be somewhat of a struggle or a battle between the modes of ignorance and passion and the modes of ignorance, passion, and goodness. A good person is fighting to be good. But even goodness, they're utterly conquered by Maya Devi, by illusion. So yes, those who are not devotees of the Lord, they are simply surrendered to the illusory energy. But a devotee, as one of Prabhupada's godbrothers explained, declares totalitarian war against the material energy. Totalitarian war. That means a war to the finish. Not just a battle, war. As soon as you come to Krishna consciousness, Maya interprets it that you are declaring total, all-out war against her, her dignity, her integrity, her power, and everything she represents. Have a good fight. What is the power of Maya? The illusory energy. She's all-powerful. She's Krishna's energy. Durga. She's keeping us in the prison house of our own desires. Very formidable. Impossible to overcome. Maya has cast us in the center of this unlimited ocean. And how does she keep us there? By promising us sense gratification. By promising us pleasure. That's all. Prahlad Maharaj, 5-year-old boy, he spoke profound philosophy, but he also made things very simple. If you want to be free of suffering, if you want to be happy, just stop trying to be happy in this world. Because all the happiness in this world, it's all like scratching an itch. It's all mental concoction. Really, if we see the world for what it is, we won't be attracted. But it's due to the uncontrolled mind that we're bound birth after birth after birth. If you have an itch, if you are directed by your good intelligence, you'll somehow or other resist scratching it, put on the proper medicine, get healed, and be happy. Yes? But if your intelligence is overcome by the mind, instead of the mind being directed by the intelligence, then you're thinking that you're going to overcome that itch by scratching it. And as long as you scratch it, it never goes away. It gets worse and worse and worse. But it feels good. But as it feels good, it feels miserable. Yes? Scratching an itch is simultaneous suffering and misery. While you're scratching, you're thinking it feels so nice. It's such relief. Prabhupada explained, actually, sense gratification in this world is just a relief from the anxiety of our desires. The desire for sense gratification is like, it's like a thirst, a hunger. It's painful, is it not? When the mind contemplates in the objects of the senses, it's painful. We're craving, we're longing, we're needing. And that enjoyment, Prabhupada explains, is not really positive enjoyment. What it is, it's just a temporary relief from the pain from the misery of our wants, of our desires, of our longings. And that relief of pain is considered great pleasure, because on the material platform, that's the only pleasure there is. It's just the relief of pain. If you don't have if you don't have a desire for something, can you enjoy it? It's like even the best cinema of Bollywood. If you're not interested and you don't want to go and you're sitting there and you're watching, can you enjoy? It's a waste of time. I remember one of my friends went to a cinema house and he said that cinema house was freezing cold. They had the air conditioner on so high. The AC was so freezing. He was getting sick, getting cough, getting cold. He was sitting there. I said, well, why don't you leave it? It's because I was watching the cinema. I said, well, was it a good cinema? He said, no, it was terrible. I said, well, why did you subject yourself? Now you have a cold, now you have a cough, you're going to get bronchitis. Why did you subject yourself to that? He said, because somehow or other my mind just thought that I want to enjoy it, but I didn't enjoy it. Hare Krishna. Maya is so powerful. Mental concoction. We have expectation to enjoy something with the mind through the senses. And then we become obsessed with that. And that obsession is an illusion. Thus we keep scratching, scratching, scratching. Krishna tells in Gita that trying to satisfy the senses through sense gratification is putting fuel in a fire. The fire goes down when you put fuel in it, but it becomes hungrier, stronger, and more out of control with every piece of fuel you place. So it's a hopeless situation. Therefore, Rishabhdev tells his sons, birth after birth after birth after birth, we get material bodies that are subject to birth, old age, disease, and death. The eternal soul, why is it subjected to all this? And factually, in every part of the world, there has been religious saints, prophets, avatars that have come and told everybody that this, the enjoyments of this world is not your home. People know it. But because of their obsession, because of their addiction, they create all sorts of philosophies, all sorts of ideologies, just so that their intelligence will be more at peace trying to enjoy sinful activities. That's what atheism is about. It's not scientific. All of these modern Western scientists, they proclaim that don't talk about God or morality, because that is not scientific. It's the most scientific. It's the most logical. Who am I? Where am I coming from? What is this world? What is my relationship with this world? There has been great spiritual teachers and scriptures throughout the ages, in every society. But when people just allow their minds to focus on the senses and their objects, they become victimized. They become mad. Nunam pramata. They become like madmen. And in that madness, they engage in so many sinful activities. But if their intelligence knows that they're doing wrong, then there's something in the background that's disturbing our sense gratification. Yes? If you're doing something that intellectually you know is degraded, outrageous, and you're just a weakling, you're just fallen and useless and insignificant, you have no proper determination, you have no proper guidance, how could you enjoy knowing that? Huh? It's like a sincere devotee, even if he's trying to enjoy, his intelligence is saying, you're a fool, you're a nonsense, you're just so So weak. What are you doing, you fool? And meanwhile, just like Bhavananda Prabhu was telling this story about in New York, he saw one young girl. She was holding her nose and eating Mahaprasad, just eating more and more and more. She couldn't stop eating it, but she didn't want to enjoy it, so she was holding her nose so she wouldn't enjoy it too much. But she couldn't give them. It's psychotic. You're enjoying, but you know it's wrong. People engage in sinful activities, but if they know that they're going to go to hell for it, how can you enjoy? Yes? If you have faith in the scriptures, if you're educated properly, you know, I'm going to suffer hellish consequences if I engage in this sinful activity. But you do it anyway. Are you really enjoying? It's just, you know, just your mind and senses are victimized, but your intelligence is ashamed. It's disgusted. It's embarrassed by the whole thing. Is that enjoyment? What do you think? Therefore, so that they can just enjoy unrestrictedly with their intelligence, they create all these ideologies and philosophies and even so-called religious concepts to justify sinful activity and sense gratification. So they can get fuller pleasure when they sin. Yes, their conscience is no longer functioning proper, their conscience. Their intelligence is convinced that I am this body and eat, drink, sleep, enjoy, mate, and be happy because we don't know whether tomorrow will come. Yes, it's one life. Enjoy it. Now, in previous ages, when people engaged in such type of sinful activities, They were ashamed. They felt disgust and embarrassment before God. But in Kali Yuga, rampantly, Maya Devi, through the minds and the perverted intelligence of humanity, creates all of these so-called scientific explanations to prove that you're just matter. You are the body. There is no witness. There is no reason to restrain oneself. Resisting is a hardship. So don't resist, persist. Nice philosophy. It rhymes. Don't resist, persist. Be happy. But what is that happiness? It is the happiness of scratching a raging rash. That's all. But with our intelligence, others are convincing us through all kinds of sophisticated scientific, philosophical, technical terms that actually this rash is not a rash. What it really is it's a blessing that's meant to be enjoyed. That's what the rash is. And the more it gets red and it burns, the more fortunate you are. Because the more you can enjoy it. Yes? That's really all that atheism is about. Just rationalization, justification for that we can have a clearer conscience to engage in sinful activities. But Bhagavad Gita teaches us that kama esha krodha esha rajo guna samudbhava. The all-devouring sinful enemy of the entire creation is this desire to enjoy separate from Krishna, kama. So yes, many people will run away from the Krishna consciousness movement when they hear these things. Just like Prabhupada was preaching in 22nd Avenue. And quite a famous musical band of the 1960s, they actually came to see Prabhupada. Do you remember their names? The Fugs. Very glamorous name. And I think there were three or four of them. And they were influential. And all they sang about was intoxication and sex. That's all. That's why they were so famous. Because people like to hear about that in Kali Yuga. People in the mode of goodness would vomit hearing their songs. But the people so much in passions and ignorance, they were just working hard to earn money to buy their records and listen and enjoy. Because what we associate with, we become very influenced by that. Just listening to that music is like putting fuel in the fire. Yes? So they were very, very famous for singing about very degraded subjects like intoxications and sex. But they came to see Prabhupada. Hayagriva Prabhu and these other devotees, they actually brought him to see Prabhupada, Allen Ginsberg. Prabhupada was speaking about how you're not this body or the eternal soul, and they were really listening. Prabhupada was really enlightening them. But the devotees were in their minds. Some devotees who were there told me that some of the devotees were actually praying to Krishna that Prabhupada doesn't tell them the regulative principles. Because they knew they'd never be able to accept such an impractical idea. So devotees were actually praying to Krishna that Prabhupada not talk about the four regulative principles to them. But Krishna's in Prabhupada's heart. So they were listening, and Prabhupada culminated by, first he was talking about the chanting of the holy names and how it spiritually enlightens you through music, and they really liked that. Spiritual enlightenment through music, because they were musicians. And then Prabhupada said, but you must follow these principles. And, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating, no illicit sex. And they just looked down on the ground. And after a few seconds, they got up and left. It's intolerable for them. What Prabhupada was doing is he was challenging everything they dedicated their life to, not only personally, but everything they were propagating. They were heroes, they were famous because of that. But Bhagavad Gita explains, what is intoxication? When we are frustrated, because our lust, our kama, is not being properly fulfilled, both mentally and physically, then we take shelter of the mode of ignorance, just to dull our mind, dull our senses, and dull our intelligence. And that's what intoxication is about. Recently, I was with a very high society person in Bombay. And he was telling me at the very aristocratic parties in Bombay, everyone's holding alcoholic beverages in their hands the whole time. It's fashionable, just walking around drinking, sometimes taking very heavy drugs. In fact, this person told me, he's been to these degraded high society parties in Europe, in America, in Australia. He said, but in this high society range of the top leaders of society, he said, the parties in India are more degraded than anywhere else in the world. And this is a person who goes to them but doesn't indulge in those things. He said, they are more degraded. Is it a surprise? Prabhupada explained exactly why. He said the Indians who try to enjoy Western culture, or Western, not culture, Western, I'm not going to use that word. He's from the West, so he knows it. But the Western way of sense gratification, Prabhupada said they are like new crows. Now, if any of you want a practical visualization of the nature of crows, just go to the side of the temple. The other day I was sitting in the garden, and we have nice, beautiful trees. There's kadamba trees, and champak trees, and bakula trees, and all these nice little sparrows. They're all just flying in the trees and eating the seeds of the trees and eating nice seeds and drinking water. And they're just so happy just going from leaf to leaf and branch to branch, just enjoying the beauty of the garden. Yes? But then I left and I saw there was, this is literal. This is historical, what I'm telling you. There was one of those big blue plastic trash cans with the garbages, just full of all kinds of decomposed garbage that smelled miserable. Yes? And circling the whole rim of the garbage were crows. Right outside the fence of the garden. Not a single crow came in the garden. They were all eating the garbage. And the more disgusting the garbage was, the more they were enjoying it. Someone picked up this one piece. It was really looked horrible. It was just disgusting, decomposed sewage. And they were fighting over it. Haribo. See? They are saying, yes, yes. Correct. They're proud of it. They're not ashamed. They're proud, the crows. So Prabhupada explained that the Paramahamsa, the swan, never goes to the sewage. The swan goes to the lotus flower, goes to the beautiful gardens, the clear waters, and drinks the nectar from the lotus flower. But the crows, they're always going to the places where there's so much garbage and pollution. That's why in the cities today, so many crows, because there's so much sewage and so much garbage, it's so much waste. So Prabhupada said, when Indians who are coming from a civilization of swans, when they try to enjoy the materialism of Western sense gratification, says they are new crows. Now, what is the difference between a new crow and an old crow? This is very important for you Indians to understand. The difference between a new crow and an old crow is an old crow is eating the garbage, but he's not so enthusiastic about it because he's been eating it for his whole life. Yes? But a new crow, it's something very new. It's something very fashionable. And amongst all the other new crows around you, the more you can enjoy it, the more they think you're cool. A cool crow, yes? So very, very enthusiastic. So the parties in India are more degraded than the West because it's something new, it's something, the new crows. This garbage is something, tastes so good, it's so fresh, it's so different, so nice. That is the degradation of this age of Kali. So therefore, Krishna explains, from the very beginning, we should somehow or other conquer over this lust. We must control all of the senses on all sides by the mind and the intelligence. Tani saravani samyamya yukta asita matpara. Vasehi asyandriyani tasya pragya pratishtita.
Krishna says, one who restrains his senses and fixes his consciousness upon me is a man of steady intelligence. How to do that?
There are the do's and there are the don'ts, Prabhupada explains.
There are rules of what is to be done and what is not to be done. What is not to be done is to, we must follow these four regulative principles. And what is to be done is to fix the consciousness on Krishna. And that's what initiation is about. We take a vow not to do what harms our spiritual life the most. The four rules. Those are don'ts. And then we fix our mind on Krishna. We take a vow to fix our mind on Krishna through the chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare.
Vishayadani vartante niraharasya dehena rasa varajamarasopyasya param dristvani vartate.
It's only possible to divert one's consciousness away from sense gratification if we experience something higher. Therefore, the path of bhakti is the simplest but the most powerful. The path of bhakti is to keep one's mind and senses positively engaged in Krishna's service. And gradually we experience a higher and higher and higher taste. It's not cheap. It may not come so easy. We've been addicted to mental and physical pleasures since time immemorial. If it takes a few decades, that's not much at all. We have to show our sincerity. If we're just sincere, Krishna will give us all help. Krishna tells a nice story. But I'll go before telling the story Krishna tells, I'll tell a story Shukadeva Goswami explains. There was a king named Buddha, and his wife was Ila, and they had a son whose name was Ila, also known as Pudurava. And this is an important story to understand. Material opulences can put us in very dangerous situations. Because the more we have any opulence in this material world, the more we're going to be a target to Maya Devi and her agents. Yes? He had such a beautiful body. Pururava's body was like that of Cupid. Now, how many of you men would like to have such a beautiful, strong, handsome, heroic body like Cupid? You don't have to raise your hand. Well, he was like that. Very learned, very distinguished. He was a king of the world. Very, very wealthy, young. He was strong, he was intelligent, he was beautiful. He was wealthy. He had everything. He was such a great person, on this sense, that even Narada Muni was describing his glories. So Narada Muni was in Indraloka describing the incredible beauty, strength, and opulence of Pudurava. And one of Indra's dancing girls, the Apsara, Urvasi, she was listening. And just by hearing about Pudurava, she fell in love with him. Yes? And she fixed her mind. Because she was cursed by two demigods
that she had to, for some time, become like a human being on earth. So she was thinking, as long as I have to do that, this is the way I want to do it. So she fixed her mind. And Urvasi was the most beautiful lady of Indra's court. So she came right before Pururava in a secluded place and presented herself in such a passion for him that he couldn't resist. So she said, please, let us enjoy. And he said, yes, yes, it is the will of providence that you have come. Let us enjoy. She said, we can enjoy, we could marry, but because I'm from the celestial worlds, you have to grant me two benedictions. And if you break these benedictions, then I'll leave you immediately. The first one, only feed me edibles that are cooked in ghee. Hare Krishna. He said, definitely. And she said, I have come down from the celestial world with two little lambs. And these lambs are like my own sons. I love them dearly. That you will protect these lambs. He said, yes, yes, I will protect the lambs. And she said, and another thing, in the heavenly planets, we are dignified. I never want to see you undressed anywhere outside of when we're enjoying together in the bed. He said, I will never do such a thing. So then he was completely immersed in enjoying the pleasures of Urvasi for many days. But Indra was lonely for her. So he sent two Gandharvas, and they were very intelligent. What they did is in the middle of the night, right when Pururava was enjoying with Urvasi, they stole the two lambs. And the two lambs were screaming and crying, ah! And Urvasi just looked at Pururava with such wrath and said, she scolded him. She said, you rascal. She said, you are posing yourself to be a big hero and a strong king, but you're nothing but a coward and a eunuch. My lambs are being stolen, and you're just laying here like a weakling, like a fool, just enjoying with me. She was really shooting arrows in his heart through her words. What a total disappointment and disgrace you are to the Kshatriya race. So Pururava was, because he's a Kshatriya. Dishonor is worse than death, especially from Urvasi. So he just didn't think. He just picked up a sword and charged at the Gandharvas. But he forgot to put on his clothes. That was the problem. And then the Gandharvas, they became effulgent. Their bodies, they have mystic powers. They just lit up. They don't need torches or flashlights or anything like that, or electricity. They just chanted a mantra and their body became effulgent and lit up all directions. And it was at midnight. And Urvasi saw that here is Pururava coming back with the lambs in his hands without clothes. So she left him. Hare Krishna. Should I continue? This is Srimad Bhagavatam. So she left him. What happened to that poor king? Nunam pramata kudute vikarma. He was totally mad. He could not live without her. He couldn't rule his kingdom. He couldn't do anything. He was just psychotic. All he could think of is getting her back. Couldn't perform his duties. There was not a drop of happiness left in his heart. He was just in anguish. This is the law of nature. To the degree you're attached to something that gives you enjoyment, to that same degree you will suffer when it's taken away. And everything is temporary. Everything will be taken away in due course of time. That is why detachment is actually the only way you can be peaceful in this world. To the degree you're detached, you can be peaceful. To the degree you're attached to anything temporary, you have to suffer in due course of time. In Kali Yuga, people cultivate attachment to the temporary. Civilized life is to detach oneself from the temporary. That's what all the ashrams, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, all the four ashrams are scientific social processes of gradually or quickly detaching yourself from temporary enjoyment. Because there's no other way to be happy. And of course, we know the best way to detach ourselves from the temporary is to completely attach ourselves to the eternal. That is bhakti. So he left all of his duties as king. He couldn't function anymore. He just wandered the world looking for Urvasi. Can you imagine? Just like a madman, just wandering alone all over the world looking. And finally, he came to Kurukshetra. On the bank of the Saraswati River, she was sitting with five other gentlemen. And he was so shameless. He fell at her feet and was begging her, please be merciful, please be merciful. If you don't come back to me, I'm going to give up my life. And she preached him very nicely. She said, you are a fool. Why are you so attached to sense gratification? Don't you understand that the senses are like foxes? Yes, the senses, when they become attached to their object, are like foxes that just come and devour you. The scriptures explain that the senses that are searching sense gratification are like venomous snakes. The very senses and their attachment to the objects are like foxes that eat us and snakes that poison us. She said, don't you see that? Don't you see the misery I've caused you? Why are you so attached? You're a fool. She taught Gita philosophy to him. But he was so intoxicated, so infatuated, because his mind, indriyanam icharatam yanmanonavadiyate tarasyaharati pragya vayor navam vivambasi. His mind was so fixed on his senses, he could, after hearing her very beautiful discourse, he just begged her, please let me enjoy with you. And she said, all right, I'll let you have one sun a year. One night a year will enjoy an olive a sun for you, but that's the only time you'll see me. So anticipation, 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 waiting, 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 longing for that one day to come, you know. It was like 364, 363, 364, and just waiting, waiting. And then it was getting closer, 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 closer. And then only 3 days, 2 days, one day. And she appeared. And oh, how he enjoyed. At least he thought he was. Just scratching that itch. He had one night a year to scratch, and he scratched. And then she left. And then he was in total madness. He was in madness when he was scratching it, and he was in madness when she left. Absolutely just disoriented and miserable. I have to wait another year now. Just obsessed. It was such a miserable situation. He did this whole sacrifice. Because Satya Yuga turned into Treta Yuga, so at that time, Yajna became the Yuga Dharma. So he did this whole elaborate sacrifice to petition Lord Vishnu. And the whole purpose of the sacrifice was to live on the same planet as Urvasi. And he did it. And he was living with Urvasi. And then there was no separation. That's the end of the story. Now, Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana. No story ends with that. But it seems that way. I remember when I first read, what's going on here? This is the ninth chapter ended. That chapter of the ninth canto ended like that. He's enjoying like anything. But then in the 11th canto, Krishna, he actually puts the conclusion to the story, the Aila Gita, where Pururava, he's enjoying, but then he realizes, what am I doing? The process of enjoying and separation was so intense, that he actually came to the conclusion that he's the greatest fool, totally victimized by his senses, and therefore he's wasted his entire life. And he's in utter misery. And in that state, he takes shelter of Krishna. He just gives it all up and just totally takes shelter of Krishna. That sense gratification is the path to suffering and death. The only refuge is in taking shelter of the supreme reservoir of all pleasure. Rama means the reservoir of all pleasure. We are looking for pleasure because the soul is pleasure-seeking. We have to simultaneously understand the dangers of sense gratification very, very carefully and very soberly. And with that intelligence, we have to be very strict. Just like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when he saw Lord Chaitanya, 24-year-old sannyasi, and he's so beautiful. Because the more you have things that are attractive, the more you're going to attract material energy to plunder you. Yes? Just like a rich man, so many thieves want to rob him. Nobody wants to rob a poor man. Yes? If a woman is beautiful or a man is handsome, so many people are aggressively wanting to exploit you. If you're not beautiful, nobody really cares. Yes? If you're strong, the big champions, everybody else wants to defeat you. If you're not a champion, nobody even wastes their time trying to defeat you. There's no honor in defeating a loser, right? There's no honor in defeating a loser. But if you can defeat the champion, you become the champion. Yes. So whatever opulence we have, we're going to become attractive, and people are going to be attracted to plunder us, to exploit us. Yes, that's what happened to Pururava. He was beautiful and wealthy. That's what happened to Vishwamitra. He had the opulence of renunciation. He attracted powers to come and defeat. So devotees are only concerned with being the servant of the servant of the servant. Devotees want to put their mind, their hearts, their energies into utilizing these serpents. The senses are our most glorious offerings to God when they're used for the proper purpose. But if not, those same senses are like venomous serpents to our own souls. That is the verdict of the scriptures and the acharyas. Therefore, with the grace of the Vaishnavas, the spiritual master, we're being given the opportunity to fulfill the real mission of human life, to actually find the supreme pleasure that the soul is longing for in fixing our consciousness on Krishna. Aishwaryasya, samagrasya, viryasya, yashashashriya. Krishna possesses all the six opulences in full. And Krishna is so merciful, so kind. He's appearing on the altar as Sri Radha Gopinath with Srimati Radharani just to attract our hearts. He's appearing in the beautiful words of Srimad Bhagavatam to nourish our intelligence. His pastimes, as we hear them more and more and more and more and more, we are enchanted by his pastimes. And our natural love flows toward the lotus feet of Krishna. And Krishna gives us so many wonderful dynamic activities of devotional service in which we can use the same mind, the same senses, the same intelligence in doing wonderful, wonderful offerings to Krishna and becoming purified. Sarvapadiva nirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktaruchyate. If we just use our senses in the service of Rishikesh, our senses, our mind, our whole existence becomes purified. But of all the processes of devotional service, Lord Chaitanya said, the most powerful is how Krishna has descended within his name. We must take shelter of the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And then, rather than nunam pramata kurute vikarma, rather than being mad for sense gratification, we become mad for Krishna. Hare Krishna. That is the solution, to become mad for Krishna. Hanuman was mad for Ram. Yes? Where is Ram? Where is Ram? Somebody said, Hanuman, control yourself. He's in your heart. Then I will see him. Just ripping his chest open, ripping his heart open. No, stop, stop, stop. And he was so mad for Ram that when he ripped his heart open, Sita and Ram actually appeared right within his heart so he could see. Very nice. That's madness, is it not? But that's good madness. Ravana was mad in another way. His own wife, Mandodari, said, Ravana, give this idea for Sita up, you'll be destroyed. Kumbhakarna told him. His own brother, Vibhishan, his brother, told him. Everyone was telling him. But he was, Maricha, the mystic, they all told him, give up this madness, but he couldn't give it up. His mind was so much focused on the sense objects, to the false Sita. So that's madness. And look where it got him. Frustration, devastation, did nothing but suffer due to that obsession. But Hanuman was mad, but he was mad for the service of Ram. And the gopis of Vrindavan, how they were mad when Krishna left Ras Lila. They were in the forest just begging the trees and the birds and the deers and the moon, where is the son of Nanda Maharaj? Have you seen him? Begging the river Yamuna and the lotus flowers, please tell us, where is Krishna? And when no one answered their appeals, they were just in madness of remembering Krishna. They were enacting his leelas of killing Putana and killing Sakatasura, killing Vatsasura, lifting Govardhan. Totally mad for Krishna. So life is about being mad, but being mad for the right thing. Being mad for Krishna is ananda, pure ecstasy. And being mad for sense gratification is the source of all suffering. We should not waste our time. Thank you very much.